Japan, so eat it, just eat it. Don't wanna argue, I don't wanna debate. Don't wanna hear about what kind of food you hate. You won't get no dessert till you clean up your plate, so eat it. Don't you tell me you're full, just eat it.
Eat it, eat it, eat it.
Get yourself an egg and beat it. Have some more chicken, have some more pie.
Weird Al Yankovic has been satirizing pop music and culture for decades, and he became something of a household name when Eat It, his parody of Beat It. I don't have to explain all of that, do I?
Anyway, I know all the stuff. I'm well aware.
Everybody knows about this song, and it climbed the Billboard charts and made him famous, and now he's sold more comedy albums than anyone else in history. He's won 3 Grammys. He's collected almost 2 million followers on Twitter. He's also the author of a children's book called When I Grow Up, published last February by HarperCollins. And a new iPhone and iPad app based on the book was recently released. And there's also his latest CD, Alpocalypse, his first in 5 years, which has just been released. And I'm very pleased that all of that has brought Weird Al Yankovic back to our show today. Hello.
I'm glad to be here.
You were in the news before your album came out because Lady Gaga reportedly denied you permission to parody her song, Born This Way.
That was a bit of miscommunication. Apparently, it wasn't really her that was doing the denying. It was her manager. It was a bit of misrepresentation, actually, because we were dealing with her manager, and we were always hearing, well, I have to run this by Gaga, and she has final approval on this, and, you know, it's got to pass muster with her. And we got turned down, and we assumed that was because Lady Gaga didn't like it. And when I put my song on the internet and Lady Gaga found out about it, she reversed that because she's, oh, I'm a big Weird Al fan. This is the first I'm hearing this. So.
Well, it's often the case that you got to get past all the people who think they're protecting
right.
an artist. And I suspect this is not the first time something like
no,
this happened.
No, I wish this was more of an exception to the rule. But yeah, a lot of celebrities and artists have a hard candy coating around them. Their representation, their managers, their publicists, whatever. So I found that most artists, when you get to them directly, most of them have a really good sense of humor about it. And they realize that, you know, I've been doing this for a long time and it's not mean-spirited. And it's a kind of an homage for them.
And also, don't they get a piece of the royalties?
Absolutely. I mean, it's their music, certainly, and they keep the publishing, so they make a little bit of coin as well.
So what do you do? Do you show them the lyrics first, or do you send them a demo?
It varies in every single case. Generally, I try to get by with just a concept because I like to, you know, I spend a long time crafting the lyrics, so I like to think when I'm working on it that I'm actually going to get to record it so I'm not wasting my time. So basically, we present them with like a one-paragraph description, like here we want to do a parody of your song, here's the title, here's what it's going to be about. And because I've got a track record, I've been doing this for 3 decades, they realize usually that it's, you know, all in good fun, like I said.
No, you say usually. There's some people who
well,
don't like it. I mean, maybe we should play Amish Paradise. What do you think?
Well, okay then.
Coolio got annoyed with that song, didn't he?
Well, that was a singular incident where that was a real bit of miscommunication because I was told that he had approved it. My record label tells me that they talked to him directly and he said he was fine with it. And after the fact, he made a public statement that he turned it down. He said no. He thought it was inappropriate for me to do the song. And I don't know. You know, it's very much he said, she said. So like, to this day, I don't know exactly what happened there.
Well, let's listen to your version.
As I walk through the valley where I harvest my grain, I take a look at my wife and realize she's very plain. But that's just perfect for an Amish like me. You know I shun fancy things like electricity. At 4:30 in the morning, I'm milking cows. Jebediah feeds the chickens and Jacob plows. Fool, and I've been milking and plowing so long that even Ezekiel thinks that my mind is gone. I'm a man of the land, I'm into discipline. Got a Bible in my hand and a beard on my chin. But if I finish all of my chores and you finish thine, then tonight we're gonna party like it's 1699. We've been spending most our lives living in an Amish paradise. I churn butter once or twice, living in an Amish paradise.
Now, you got to be someone without much of a sense of humor to be offended by that.
Well, there's ironies on top of ironies because Coolio's song, Gangsta Paradise, was actually based on a Stevie Wonder song called Pastime Paradise. And we got Stevie Wonder's permission as well because, you know, that was the song that the original was based on. So you'd think if Stevie Wonder was cool with it, that Coolio would not have a problem.
Now, is this getting all this permission something you've always done, or is this the result of all of the legal problems that sampling has brought about?
Well, it's something that I have always done, and legally I could get away with not doing it. It's a very gray area legally. The Supreme Court has historically ruled in favor of parody artists. But I don't try to get away with things. I think one of the reasons I've been able to sustain a career for 3 decades is I work with the artists. I don't burn bridges. I don't step on toes. I want them to be in on the joke.
How do you decide which songs you want to parody?
Well, there's no hard set parameters. Basically, I peruse the Billboard charts. I listen to a lot of contemporary hit radio. I try to ascertain which songs would be good targets, which songs jump out at you on the radio, which have a very definable musical or lyrical hook to them. And then from that group of songs, I try to figure out which tunes I can come up with a clever enough idea for.
And then you also do videos. Do you try to do a parody of the original video as well?
It depends. I did a lot more of that earlier in my career because...
Well, there aren't as many videos these days.
Well, that, and also people just aren't as familiar with them. I mean, in the 80s, when it was more of a communal thing, MTV played videos and everybody was watching MTV. And they could pinpoint very specific details about these videos because the whole world was focused on these videos. So I could do some kind of very slight variation on a theme or tweak a detail a little bit and it would be funny. Whereas now, you know, there are very few videos that I think people would be able to have that much of a recollection of.
Well, MTV these days does reality shows, doesn't it?
Right.
Was Eat It your first big video?
First big one, yeah. I had a couple smaller ones before that, but Eat It was the one that really kind of put me on the map. I mean, I think the day that Eat It went into heavy rotation on MTV, I became a celebrity. I mean, you talk about overnight fame, and it literally was that. I mean, the next day, people were pointing at me in fast food restaurants going, "Hey, it's the Eat It guy."
How did Michael Jackson react to that song?
Michael was great about it. I mean, we got his permission, which at the time was kind of boggled my mind because, you know, I had one album out and I had very a modest level of fame. I mean, my first album did just barely enough for my record label to go, okay, you can do a second album. So when we approached Michael Jackson, it was really from the school of, well, I guess it wouldn't hurt to ask. We really didn't think that the most popular person in the universe would give us the time of day. But he had a great sense of humor about it, and he signed off on it and allowed us to do the single and the video.
And then also I'm Fat, which was based on a song, I'm Bad. And is it true that he let you use his set to shoot your video for I'm Fat?
Yeah, I mean, he was extremely supportive. He had created it. No, and it wasn't the one that he used for his Bad video, because that was, I believe, an actual New York subway set. The one that we used was also his set, but it was recreated at 9/10 scale on a soundstage in Culver City. He did something for his Moonwalker video where he did it with kids. So everything was a slightly smaller scale. But that actually worked great for us because with all the plus-sized dancers, it made him look even larger.
The new CD, Alpocalypse, actually is a CD-DVD combination.
No, that's the deluxe version, which is the way
that's
to go.
That's the one I have.
That's the one
deluxe
you have.
Version.
Well, only the best
I can
for
watch you,
you
and
only
see
the
it.
Best.
And what were the songs that you particularly liked parodying here?
Well, the Lady Gaga one for sure was a whole lot of fun. We also have parodies of Miley Cyrus. There's a kind of dark and twisted version of Party in the USA, which I renamed Party in the CIA. There's a Taylor Swift parody about TMZ. There's a take on the state of the economy to the tune of T.I.'s Whatever You Like. So it's a pretty eclectic album. It goes in 20 different directions. There's only 12 songs.
Well, let's hear a little bit of Party in the USA, or your version of it anyway.
Okay.
I'm feeling nervous, but I'm really kind of wishing for an undercover mission. That's when the red alert came on the radio, and I put my earpiece on. Got my dark sunglasses on, and I had my weapon drawn. So I get my hand. Tapping the phones like, yeah. Shredding the files like, yeah. I memorized all the enemy spies. I gotta neutralize today. Yeah. It's a party in the CIA. Yeah. It's a party in the CIA.
party of the CIA, and I don't know whether Miley Cyrus would appreciate that.
Well, she approved it. And, you know, I just felt like there weren't enough songs on the radio about waterboarding. So I'm just filling that vacuum.
Yeah, well, there's a lot about pop culture in this CD. You have to not only write those clever lyrics, but you do have to approximate the sound of the records. So that must be a lot of the fun, too, especially when you're doing songs that women made famous.
Well, that's a big challenge because I do have a pretty large vocal range, but I cannot sing as high as Miley Cyrus or Taylor Swift or for that matter, even Lady Gaga. So the biggest problem is that we do have to change the key on record. So it's not going to sound exactly like the original.
My guest is Weird Al Yankovic, or as he is named in his book, When I Grow Up, Al Yankovic.
Well, that's my author's credit. When I'm behind the camera, I'm only Weird Al really when I'm in front of a microphone or a camera. And as an author or a director or a producer, it's just the more serious Al Yankovic.
Well, your parodies are often kind of adult-oriented, but kids do appreciate what you do.
Yeah.
Is that why you wrote a children's book?
Well, I've always had a large fan base among kids. I mean, I don't my albums aren't like kid albums, but
it's like Mad Magazine.
Yeah, very much like that. I mean, I think at a certain age, some kind of special synapse starts firing in your brain and you start appreciating that kind of irreverent comedy and parody and satire. So I've always known that I've had a fairly sizable section of my audience that was young. And I've always enjoyed children's lit. I mean, growing up, I was a huge fan of Dr. Seuss and Shel Silverstein. And in the back of my mind, I always thought that it would be very cool to someday write a children's book. And I was approached a few years ago by Ann Hoppe, who's an editor for HarperCollins. And she made a very generous offer that if I ever wanted to write a children's book, they would love to put it out. She was a fan of my wordplay from my song lyrics and thought I might be fairly adept at it.
And this is about a boy who has a lot of ideas about what he wants to be when he grows up. From a chef to a snail trainer to a gorilla masseuse, what did you want to be when you were growing up?
Well, you know, I a number of things, but I specifically remember when I was about 12 years old, a guidance counselor in my junior high asked me that question, and I told him I wanted to be a writer for Mad Magazine because I was obsessed with Mad Magazine. And he kind of looked at me and said, yeah, I don't think you're going to make it in comedy. Why don't you be an architect? You're good at drafting. You like math. And I was very impressionable, and I said, okay. And I went to college for 4 years, and I got a degree in architecture. But my third year in, I realized that wasn't really my passion. So
you've never designed a building?
No, not as such. I mean, I never really worked in architecture. I mean, I can still print pretty neatly. I've got the architectural handwriting, but that's about it.
And then how did you get started as a pop music satirist? Was this connected to your appearances on Dr. Demento's show?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, my whole career is sort of accidental. I mean, I was a big fan of the Dr. Demento radio show, and I was that was where I was exposed to people like, you know, Alan Sherman and Stan Freberg and Tom Lehrer. I started sending the doctor just home-recorded tapes, stuff I recorded in my bedroom with my accordion. Horrible, horrible recordings. But Dr. Demento, bless him, he played them on the radio and encouraged me to send in more and gave me my start.
And I would think your first breakthrough was My Bologna, or Bologna, however you'd say Bologna,
right.
Based on My Sharona.
Yeah, it rhymes with Sharona, right. That was certainly the first thing that ever was an official record release. That was a 45 RPM recording that Capitol Records saw fit to put out at the tail end of 1979.
And then you couldn't do this if you didn't play accordion, which was once the unhippest instrument in the world, and now has become very hip.
Yeah, now that I've brought accordion,
you think you're responsible?
To the
had nothing to do with the gypsies or anything?
I don't. Seriously, the accordion has, over the last couple of decades, become more hip. And I think, you know, the accordion really is a sensual instrument. It's just kind of gotten a bad rep over the years. I think, with no disrespect to Lawrence Welk or certainly Myron Florin, whom I'm a big fan of, but I think the Lawrence Welk show sort of tainted the image of the accordion for a long time as being supremely unhip. And it's taken decades to overcome that.
Were you aware of Joel Grey's father when you were a kid? You know, he was Mickey Katz was doing.
Oh, Mickey Katz, of course, yeah. I know some of his stuff. I'm not familiar with his entire oeuvre, but I'm certainly familiar with him.
Well, you've branched out a lot. You won a Grammy for your first album even before Eat It came out. And then you've been in UHF?
Yeah, that was my...
Is that
my,
the only movie you've made?
That's the only, full-on feature. I mean, I've done cameos in all three of the Naked Gun movies and a few things here and there, but UHF is the only feature that I was that I co-wrote and starred in.
That must be a sad memory. Why do you think it...
Why so?
Well, it wasn't the kind of big hit I would have expected from Weird Al Yankovic.
Well, you know, it became a cult hit. It unfortunately wasn't the mainstream hit that we thought it was going to be based on the reaction from the test audiences. So it was painful at the time. But it found its audience over the years through VHS and DVD and cable TV airings. And it is a big fan favorite. And in retrospect, it's certainly a hit now with the fans.
The internet has really changed things. Are people discovering you now through YouTube? iTunes?
They are, and particularly internationally, which is great because, it's been historically tough for me to get my product in record stores and places.
Where did they put them?
There's not even that many record stores anymore.
Yeah,
frankly.
But even if there are, where they put them in section?
Well, that's another thing. Like,
international?
Am I comedy?
Classical?
Am I rock? Am I jazz? What am I? YouTube and the internet kind of takes away all those barriers, and now I've got pockets of fans in parts of the world that I barely knew existed. It's amazing the reach that my material has now.
Well, you said every album has been a comeback album for you. It's harder and harder now because there are no record stores, but are sales still good?
Well, the whole industry is not doing great. We live in a BitTorrent, peer-to-peer file sharing world now, and record sales in general are considerably down from where they were 10 or 15 years ago. So considering that, my sales are okay.
Yeah, well, I think you could give your career a boost by going on American Idol. What do you think?
All right, let's make a date. Sign me up.
So what are you working on next? You have another CD or a book in the works?
I just put out Alpocalypse, so it'll be probably a little while before the next one comes out. I'm going to start working on another book probably this summer sometime, and we're touring through the end of the year, so I'm keeping busy.
And you're writing songs all along?
Well, I'm taking a little break from songwriting right now because, you know, it's sort of like giving birth when I put out an album. I just kind of let it exist for a while before I let my brain start working on it again.
Well, Weird Al Yankovic's new CD is called Alpocalypse with a wonderful cover, and it has both – there's a version where you can get both CDs and a DVD with the videos. And, of course, there's the kids' book, When I Grow Up, with illustrations by Wes Hargis. It is published by Harper. All of which has brought Al to our show today. And
did we mention that there's an app for the children's book as well? We're very excited about
it. I did
mention
that.
Okay,
yeah. iPhone and also iPad.
iPad and iPod Touch as well. How about that?
Yes, I'd rather jump naked on a huge pile of thumbtacks. I'll stick my nostrils together with crazy